content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. In this episode of Our State Magazine, we'll dig a little deeper into the theme of the July issue of Our State Magazine, entitled Summer in the Shade, and which features cool ideas to beat the heat. And our first article for today is A Living Legacy. Greensboro is getting greener, one tree at a time, one memory and one leafy neighborhood at a time. This is the one. Mary Scarlett steps off a walkway in Greensboro's Bennett College Quad and leans forward. She wants to get a better look at the inscription on a brick-sized plaque at the base of an enormous magnolia. This tree, named in honor of Ida Haslip Good by class of 1933. Yep, my father planted this tree. For every tree, we always put a plaque. At 92 years old, Mary Scarlett is a local legend. She was a baby when her parents moved to Bennett College, a historically black women's college in downtown Greensboro. Her father was superintendent of the school's building and grounds. Her mother, a dietitian. There was always a gung-ho-ism about the trees, Scarlett says. At the end of every senior day, when the students got their caps and gowns, they would go and put their tree in the ground. Scarlett was 4 years old in 1936 when a tornado barreled toward campus. I remember it so clearly, she says. My mother had gone to see a movie at the Carolina Theater. My father took me to Pfeiffer Hall for safety. Everybody was just heartbroken because those trees came down. Many were replaced. Over time, however, the magnolias and willow oaks lining Bennett's shaded quad diminished. By 2024, photos of the campus grounds bore little resemblance to the lush landscape of Scarlett's childhood. The starkening of Bennett's lawn is a microcosm of Greensboro and of landscapes around the country. Like many of Greensboro's neighborhoods, most of the campus trees were there when the buildings were built. A tree is the perfect measure of time, says Greensboro landscape architect Randall Romey. Unlike our children, who grow up really fast, we don't see trees grow. If we're the third or fourth generation experiencing a 150-year-old oak tree, then we get to see that tree reach maturity. We also get to see the end of its long life. In 2000, when another storm knocked down an entire block of pine trees behind Greensboro's David Caldwell Historic Park, Neighbor Woods was born. Romy came up with a plan to plant 170 trees, plus a collection of native shrubs like viburnum and beauty berries. Greensboro Beautiful, a local nonprofit that works with the city on beautification projects, called for volunteers to come up and plant the trees. 200 people showed up. A family planted a tree for their grandmother. We planted a tree for victims of 9/11, he says. In a couple of hours, we created a forest. Today, the Neighbor Woods program continues to shade and beautify Greensboro, one neighborhood at a time. In the months leading up to the annual planting in the fall, homeowners can request grand native canopy trees like white oaks, magnolias, and red maples, or understory trees like dogwoods and serviceberries. Romy and his fellow volunteer Keith Francis, a retired certified arborist, have volunteered with Greensboro Beautiful for more than 60 years combined and have directed Neighbor Woods since its inception. Each fall, they greet scout troops, local church groups, and college students who come to help neighbors plant their new trees. They give each volunteer a pair of gloves and a quick lesson. Having community volunteers allows people to take ownership of the land in their city, Romy says, to feel like they've contributed to the beauty of it. Together, Romy and Francis have overseen the planting of more than 4,000 trees. In addition to restoring the canopy in old neighborhoods where trees have become diseased or are dying, they also plant trees in neighborhoods that never had them to begin with. Romy, who as a child fell in love with the trees in a forest behind his house, has always been drawn to native landscapes. We're meant to live in harmony with nature, and the way that the tree takes in carbon dioxide that we breathe out and gives us oxygen in return to breathe in, he says. We are dependent on nature for our life breath. When Neighbor Woods approached Bennett College about restoring the campus to the flourishing green past that Mary Scarlett remembers, it happened to fall during the school's sesquicentennial celebration. We have a campus manual with drawings and photos from the turn of the century, Romy says. We started with a plan to plant 150 years for their 150th anniversary to put the campus landscaping back the way it was. In the end, they planted 195 trees. Today, when Scarlett walks the campus, following in her own footsteps as a child, student, teacher, and then dean, the new trees bring back memories and give her hope for the future. Every tree has a purpose, just like the students who came as fresh women and leave prepared to take their place in the world, she says. When you plant a tree, it grows, it matures, it becomes. Our next article is entitled The Swing of Things. In North Carolina, the history of rope hammocks is as intricate as the nets that cradle us on a hot summer afternoon. More than 50 years on, they're a tradition that's woven deeply into our coast. And this is it has a picture on the front in Southern Shores in someone's backyard. A woven rope hammock from Nag's Head Hammocks is as much a part of the landscape as the view of Currituck Sound. And again, this is either at sunrise or sunset. It's hard to tell. But the pretty colors of the golden part of the sky and pink in other parts of the sky. We're looking at the hammock overlooking the calm Currituck Sound. Whether you live here or visit for a few days a year, North Carolina's coast has a way of growing on you, of bringing you back for more. More meals with the ones you love. More hours to laze away by the shore. More moments to wonder. There's no bottle big enough to hold all of that. But what if there were something so much part of this place that every time you saw it, you were transported in a blink to blissful moments under a Carolina blue sky? A hammock delivers memories of coastal breezes, family vacations full of wild horses and lighthouses, and the serenity of seaside sunsets every time you touch its intricate web of ropes. These handmade havens, from Outer Banks Hammocks, Nag's Head Hammocks, and Hatteras Hammocks, carry you from the mundane to a time and place you'd rather be. According to Walter Perkins III, CEO of the Hammock Source in Greenville, the Carolinas are a cradle of woven rope hammocks with a coastal mythology to match. This riverboat captain down around Pawleys Island, South Carolina, needed a more comfortable way to sleep on those steamy lowcountry nights, Perkins explains. He wove a bed from cotton rope and a double latch weave, made stretches from barrel staves, tied it all together, and he had a hammock. He created the design in 1889 and started peddling Pawleys Island hammocks. Well, South Carolina might have invented the hammock we know and love, but it was perfected here in North Carolina, thanks in no small part to Walter Perkins Jr., better known as Mr. P. Mr. P., that's my father, Perkins says proudly. He's the reason we're here today. Well, him and my grandparents. In 1971, Mr. P. was traveling across the Southeast as a buyer for American Tobacco Company when his mother asked a favor. Will you pick up one of those Pawleys Islands hammocks for the beach house? Mr. P. got two. He hung his parents, but took apart the second, studied it, and taught himself to weave. After experimenting with materials and methods, he settled on his own style. Dad would weave a bunch of hammocks and throw them in the trunk of his car, peddling them after his tobacco business was done, Perkins says. He sold more and more of them, and one day, this hobby he had turned into a business. That business became Hatteras Hammocks, a name chosen to reflect the love visitors have for the Outer Banks and the North Carolina coast, as well as the strength that Cape Hatteras Lighthouse symbolizes. I wove, Mom wove, and Dad wove too. It was all we could do to keep up with things for a while, he recalls. With some lucky breaks, an investment from a family friend, and a big order from L.L. Bean, Mr. P was able to expand the business. His hammock empire eventually grew to encompass several brands, including the original Polly's Island hammocks in 1997 and Nag's Head hammocks in 2004. All are part of the hammock source today. There must have been something in the air or on the breeze in 1971. The same year Mr. P learned to weave, Kelly Burke and Ryan Mann started Nautilus Hammocks in Wrightsville Beach. The following year, Woody Styron took over operations and, like Mr. P, borrowed a familiar name to inject a little nostalgia into the Nautilus brand. Outer Banks Hammocks was born. I guess he didn't think anybody but surfers and locals knew Wrightsville Beach, so he went with a more recognizable name, says Jonathan Allen, owner and operator of Outer Banks Hammocks and Outdoor Furniture. By 1977, Styron had sold to Clark Helton, who ran the place for almost 30 years. Allen applied for a job to earn some money after he graduated from high school. I wove my first hammock the summer of 86, and I've been doing it ever since, he says. He recalls that weaving was the best job a surfer could want. No set hours. When the surf was up, we'd hang the clothes sign and go out to the beach. He wove every summer until he graduated college in 1991. I'd been weaving and selling and teaching folks to weave for several summers, and suddenly I found myself as the manager, he says. When Allen was in his 20s, all he wanted was to surf and travel, and hammocks let him do that. But then he wanted more. In 2005, he bought Outer Banks Hammocks. The company remains small, a mile from the waves at Wrightsville Beach. A four-room bungalow houses the whole operation. We weave here, sell here, and stay focused on this place, he says. And it's true. Some of the wood components are made by a local nonprofit, Kids Making It, which teaches woodworking and entrepreneurial skills to youths. Dozens of locals have learned to weave under Allen's tutelage. Moreover, Allen is passionate about selling locally and customizing sizes and materials. He recalls one customer who had two trees close together on his property. No standard hammock hung between them properly, so Allen made one just for him. At Outer Banks Hammocks, reggae pours out of a speaker, setting the rhythm for Jasmine Beck, a weaver of 10 years. Her work is mesmerizing. She makes weaving seem easy, but it takes 20, 30 hours to really train someone. And Jasmine is one of the best I've ever worked with, Allen says. The compliment doesn't break her rhythm, but it puts a smile on her face. If we brought you on board, she says, we'd weave several together before you started one of your own. And even if we did 10, that first solo hammock would take you 3 to 5 hours, and you'd make plenty of mistakes. New weavers learn to braid a border called a sinette and to weave the ring ropes, which attach the ring to the bed of the hammock. It all looks easy, but it's not, at least not at first. Beck starts with a sinette. Her fingers, strong and calloused and marked with rope burns, are as eloquent as a flamenco's guitarist as she braids a flat, four-part plait. In less than a minute, she's done. She pirouettes to the upright loom, a wooden contraption of nails and hinges with a year's worth of marks denoting hammock sizes, and starts the weaving dance. She pins the sinette to the top bar, stretching it taut against the nails. Picking up the fid, the shuttle holding anywhere from 195 to 575 feet of thin rope, she wraps it behind a bar on the loom, and then we pull a little loop free here and here and here, punctuating each here with a tug on the rope and the quick passage of the fid down through one loop after the other. She shuffles her feet as she goes. Open a loop, drop the fid, catch it, repeat, she says, sing-songing her instructions to the music. Soon she's finished a row, looped the fid behind a bar at the other end of the loom, and is halfway back to where she started, looping and dropping and shuffling from left to right to left. She's found her groove, and it's going smoothly until it's not. She laughs. You distracted me. Look. She steps aside and gestures at what looks like a perfect row of weaving. She runs her hand along it. Here. She tugs the rope and the loop becomes half a knot. She went over where she should have gone under, or maybe it's the other way around. In seconds, she's fixed it and is on the home stretch of a swing chair. More than 200 miles north, Susan Beavers weaves at the Nag's Head Hammocks Shop and Dock. She's 75 and has been weaving for more than two decades. 24 years, she says. I took a couple of off to help with my grandbabies, and I've lost track. Like Beck, she has strong, working hands. Her knuckles are large, the calluses from thin and rope prominent. I used to box, you know, she says, making loose fists and bouncing on her toes. You can imagine her in the boxing gym she owns, throwing crisp jabs into a heavy bag. She weaves on a little stage in the center of the store, surrounded by artfully placed posts and beams from which hammocks and hammock swings hang in a dozen colors. Out front and on the back deck overlooking the Currituck Sound, there are dozens more hammocks hanging from beams and mounted on wooden metal stands. Other furniture fills the space between the hammocks. We're a store full of hammocks, but I don't think that's what we sell, she says. I think we sell this place. People want to take home a feeling, a memory. They want to feel the Outer Banks in their backyard, in Raleigh or Greensboro or Columbus, Ohio. Her favorite product is the swing, specifically the double swing, with two hammock slings to cradle two sitters. She gestures to one and sits. The swing invites a comfortable silence or an easy conversation. I like it because it creates moments we don't always share in our day-to-day. It takes a full minute of comfortable silence, easy conversation, and the rhythmic of the swing for Beavers to say this. The cry of gulls creeps in from outside. After another minute, she breaks the silence with a near whisper. Oh, this is nice. She's right. This is what people buy. Not rope and wood, but a feeling. Ryan Williams, who manages the trio of Nag's Head Hammocks shops on the Outer Banks, agrees. Visitors walk away with more than a hammock, he says. They leave with nostalgia, with a connection to the Outer Banks and the core memories they've made here. They leave wanting to make memories when they return. Back at the hammock source in Greenville, the 300,000-square-foot factory hums with activity. In one room, spools of thread become yarn and then rope. In another, workers use industrial sewing machines to make tufted and quilted hammock beds, while a few dozen paces away, weavers start their work. Some braid sennets and ring knots. Others perform the dance, gracefully sidestepping and deftly looping the rope, dropping and catching the fid, and repeating until they have a hammock. Todd Nifong, vice president of sales and marketing, stands and watches the weavers. At each station, there's a cart loaded with hammocks waiting for the next step in production, or spools of rope waiting to become hammocks. We estimate that we've used 80 million feet of cotton rope and our own Duracord rope since 1971. To put that in context, that's about six trips coast to coast in the U.S. or more than half the circumference of the Earth in ropes for hammocks. But distance can be deceiving. Those 80 million feet of rope are more, and somehow less, than a handful of coast-to-coast trips. They're a tie that binds, closing the distance between you and sunsets and sunrises and lazy afternoons 20 years gone. The distance between now and the last time your grandmother joined the family beach trip. The distance between the kids or grandkids falling asleep on your chest, their weight impossibly light and improbably pinning you to the hammock. They're a tether stretching from your home and your heart to a particular patch of coast, to Wrightsville Beach or Hatteras Island or Nag's Head, to the time you fell in love with a place and knew you'd never be complete again unless you took a piece of it with you. To learn more about Hatteras Hammocks and Nag's Head Hammocks, visit thehammocksource.com. To learn more about Outer Banks Hammocks, visit obxhammocks.com. O, that's B like boy, X, hammocks.com. One more little nugget here. What does it take to make a Nag's Head hammock? More than 1,000 feet of rope, woven with skill, 2 wooden bars, some hanging hardware, and perhaps a bit of the breezy charm of the Outer Banks. And now our next article is entitled Beneath the Brim. A Macon County milliner taps into her ancestral roots to create hats of all shapes and sizes, each one a true work of art. Teresa Bouchonnet sits at the work table in her sunny studio, folding purple-dyed material called cinamé into a strip. She tucks the sharp edges into an interior fold, trying to avoid getting cut and having her hands look like she's been, as her milliner friends say, wrestling a tiger. Later, she'll sew the strip onto the wide brim of a hat. As she works, she thinks of her grandmother's talent for stitching by hand. One day, she wants to be that good with her own needlework. All around Bouchonnet are treasures she's collected or has made. Like the looms in the middle of her studio, her parents used them for decades before they got older and moved on to other crafts. And the spinning wheel in the window. Her great-grandmother used to spin cotton on it. And, of course, the hats. Some brightly colored and flamboyant, some reserved and casual. Bouchonnet makes hats out of cinamé, straw, and wool felt, often with hat bands she weaves herself. She believes she's the only milliner in the world who weaves her own hat bands. As a milliner at the Cowie School Arts and Heritage Center in Franklin, Bouchonnet is carrying on a family tradition that dates back at least 3 generations. As a weaver, the tradition started with her great-great-grandmother, maybe even further back. As for Bouchonnet, she got her start as a maker during her childhood while living in various parts of the world. But her journey to becoming a milliner came when she came back to her birthplace, the small town of Franklin. During part of her childhood in Virginia, Bouchonnet would sit beside her father and watch him weave as she untangled knotted nylon yarn and wrapped it around a spool so he could use it to make pocketbooks. On visits to her grandmother's house in Shelby, her grandmother would teach her how to sew clothes. Throughout her childhood, she watched her mother and grandmother make hats for church because they couldn't afford to buy them. As she got older, she no longer just observed. She began to make. In high school, her father moved their family to Germany during his stint with the U.S. Army, and her mother showed her how to craft her first hat, a page boy style that she wore on her senior class trip to Amsterdam. Bouchonnet has lived in so many places, it's hard to follow. She rattles off names of countries and states in no apparent order. Germany, France, England, Washington State. But after living abroad and in other states as a child, she returned to Franklin. She attended Southwestern Community College and, after finding a few job opportunities in the 70s, joined the U.S. Air Force in 1976. She ended up liking the Air Force so much that she decided to become an officer and attended Colorado Women's College to receive her commission. She began working in government contracting and dealt with manufacturers that supplied the Air Force. She later met her husband while stationed in Spokane, Washington, and when she got pregnant with their son, she left active duty and became a reservist. After retiring from the military in 1996, Bouchonnet started her own consulting business and met with textile manufacturers in North Carolina, helping local mills stay open by becoming suppliers of the military. She saw her work as creative because she had to find unique solutions to many problems. But she also saw herself as a textile artist, and her work didn't fulfill all her creative needs. The pull to make things, she found, was still in her blood. Bouchonnet had begun teaching weaving while in the military, and after her husband retired in the 90s, the pair moved back to Franklin. But something was still missing. She wanted to follow in the footsteps of her mother and grandmother, so in 2015, she signed up for a millinery class at John C. Campbell Folk School in Brasstown. Now, she says, I'm addicted to hat making. Bouchonnet has had operations on her left and right thumbs to relieve her arthritis, and she uses CBD cream to lessen any lingering ache. Today, she no longer feels much pain in her hands, and at age 70, she can work on hats for hours before she needs to give her hands a break. Bouchonnet, a member of the Inspiring Creative Milliners Group, has completed a year-long program with Millinery and Business Academy in England. She's also attended millinery workshops and international millinery work classes and plans to one day teach hat making. She wants to spark the joy she feels in creating hats with a new generation of milliners. Bouchonnet currently teaches weaving classes at Cowie School Arts and Heritage Center. She also offers free classes for veterans and mentors her son, Christopher, in sewing. He sews his own garments as part of his involvement with the Society for Creative Anachronism, an organization in which members wear period attire from the Middle Ages and the Renaissance and participate in activities like archery and fencing competitions. Christopher often seeks his mother's wisdom when sewing, asking her questions about seam allowances and fabrics. "I think that if you don't share your skills," Bouchonnet says, "then that could be lost for future generations." When weavers come to her studio for classes, the first thing they see are her hats, a blue and white racing hat with a spiral extending upward and a green silk flower, a cream-colored royal wedding hat with upturned brim and Bouchonnet's handmade satin flowers, a turquoise wide-brim Audrey Hepburn-style hat with a black sequined band and bow. Each one of Bouchonnet's uniquely personal creations takes about 2 weeks to make. Often, her ideas come in her dreams. Once she finds that spark of creativity, her fingers get to work. She makes each hat completely by hand, often weaving the material herself, then stretching it over a block to create the shape. In the back of Bouchonnet's studio, she keeps a white cotton coverlet that her great-great-grandmother wove as a wedding gift for her daughter. Near it lies a blue coverlet that Bouchonnet's mother wove. "When you look around and you see things that are made, that they made, and that's part of you," she says. "And so by having these things in my room, I'm sharing a part of them." Sunlight streams in through the windows onto the heirloom Bouchonnet cherishes. At her table, she sews a band to the inside of a hat with stitches so small they're nearly invisible. The work is meticulous. She loses track of times. She listens to books on CD to help her concentrate. She sews on. In her hands, a work of art materializes. For more information, visit CowieTextiles.com, and I'll spell that for you. C-O-W, like cow, E-E, textiles, T-E-X-T-I-L-E-S.com. C-O-W-E-E, T like Tom, E-X, T like Tom, I-L-E-S, like Sam.com. CowieTextiles.com. Well, that sound means we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired and is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. For questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. And so long until next time.